Why not risk it by continuing to give it away?
Don't risk the brisket and all the delicious giblets. Don't risk it.
What about that time the cops heard? Oh, well, let's not get into it.
That's why I'm asking you at this time to make out a check.
This time is significant. As a matter of fact, this time is 12 midnight. This is the moment when we cross the Terminator from Friday and enter into the new and unused day of Saturday. A day pregnant with all possibilities, and furthermore, blessed by being the Sabbath itself, as some understand it, or just by being a Saturday itself instead of a day where you have to slave for the man and work for another man's paycheck and punch some.
And that was the time when
let's get those phones ringing. Good night.
Now don't you go till I come, he said.
A phonus balonus.
Don't you make any noise.
And he said this. He was talking to the guy. He went up to the third guy. He went up to the Jewish guy. And the Italian guy has been talking to the prophet.
An angel song. Yeah, I don't know why this one is here. It's easy to make fun of such verses, but
the little toy Bob stands true.
You see, children regularly used to die. Infant mortality was a thing that everyone expected. And, of course, we're heading back there as we throw science under the bus. Such poems were not the sentimental exercises they may seem in an era which used to be distinguished by scientific achievement in virology, bacteriology, and in medical science.
I'm not geared for total acceptance. You guys are freaking me out.
So fresh. The show.
That was one of the sad things.
My liver.
Give me a moment.
It's still one of the. This whole show is one of the saddest things ever.
This is terrible.
This is the worst show ever.
Life, Jenron.
Now it's all your fault. I pronounce you on the show. Mary.
Wait till your father gets
us. We are scattered here.
Turn to page 237 in your hymn.
And before all, to sanctify this
urinal
with a urinal toward destruction.
You're in a lot of trouble now.
You're in over your head.
Over the cliff of compromise and fall upon the jagged rocks. You've got to know your P's and Q's.
And Bertha will now get her away.
Dot your eyes and
I don't want to be
cross your T's.
She's going to carry you. You got to do it. She'll carry you.
Yes, we shall plight our vows.
Every jot and tittle,
Aunt Bertha,
madam,
shall overcome the evil and sin of poor Jane.
Steamy, let's blow this hot dog stand. Go get some crap.
No, I wouldn't miss this for anything.
I don't want a hot dog. We're
just going to marry that guy. And then, you know what we're going to put in there?
How could I marry a fictitious character?
Stop talking and give me the ring. With this ring, I me wed. It won't go on my finger. I'll have to give it another push.
Stop trying some lubrication.
Or of course, I do it every
time. Just do what comes naturally. And now they are going to throw rice at us in 60-pound bags.
Put these pebbles in with the rice, Jenna. Put these little rocks in with them. Oh, look, I'm throwing
high for the field artillery.
They're bombarding us with rice bags.
Okay. Crazy out.
You're looking drunk out.
There is a conspiracy in this land of ours to ram Janer down the throat.
May your show be twice as intimate as it was previously.
Right to
Aunt Bertha.
I'm sure it will be.
Dial a story.
What's talking about?
Box 1, Grand Rapids, Michigan. Goodbye now.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Billy and Kimmy stole an atomic submarine when they should have been in church learning about Jesus.
Sure hope Aunt Bertha doesn't find us in this here submarine.
Oh, she doesn't have the radar capability. Come on, let's load a torpedo and blow up the World Trade Center.
Okay. I am scared.
Don't be scared. How can we get up into the sail? You know, the conning tower.
Isn't there supposed to be some kind of ladder?
Stretching it out.
Oh, there's girls on this submarine.
Just keep talking.
I mean, there's
a girl over there.
What? I don't know what to talk about.
A submarine odyssey. Fraught with danger and excitement and...
I love me some peril.
A pretty good musical score. And Tom Conway, George Sanders' brother, with the ultra-suave British manner that some love and others detest. Motion picture classic, Atomic Submarine. And don't they have that alien with the huge eyeball in it?
Oh, you mean...
The movie, Atomic Submarine.
No, that one escapes me.
Care for some Cheez-Its?
Oh, yeah, no, I don't really care for that.
Well, I see left its bag, and I'm enjoying them now.
It was, who was the camel? It was the camel... Mr. Camel or Joe... Oh, Joe Camel.
Joe Camel.
That's who it was.
Yes. He was the mascot of Camel cigarettes.
But there's like him, and then there's Chester Cheetah, who was like a kind of a...
Well, there were more like than a, one camel who smoked camels. See, there was a whole band. He had them.
Oh, he was in a band?
It's almost like a gang of camels. Okay. He had Joe Camel going. And they had different names like Busta and.
Okay,
so.
Sure.
And you can look it up.
They got a Camel Land. The adventure. Was there a comic or like how did they like display this stuff?
It was just,
like,
it was just a merchandising idea which was further and further developed. But
right.
Of course, you're creating a character and all sorts of implications about the product.
Like, Mac Tonight never had an origin story. He just was there.
I'd walk a mile for a camel. And were they... And they are mild.
Right. And FM. Here we are at the Boogie Hut. You can get waffles and blues for... $5. Put some banana compote on that waffle, yeah.
An unlawful waffle. And many claim that waffling on certain controversial issues.
I have never been.
Never
waffling.
Justified by the federal government or any senior officer in the federal government. Such as the President of the United States.
Didn't think that you knew this is what it would take to run the White House, didn't you? All these machines, so busy now. Thus adding to life. I cut that line. That's not the full line. But we saw it last week.
Oh, remember? Yeah?
Sarah's birthday, she wanted to play Fifth Element.
Yes, I remember. We saw it. I mean, we didn't hear it, but we saw it.
Yeah. But do you remember Zorg's, like, pro-robot speech?
Pro-robot, you say?
Yeah, he, like, he breaks a glass intentionally for it to, like, drop off the desk and
now I do remember.
Crack on the street, and then all these robots come to the service.
They come out and clean it up, yeah.
Right. So he delivers like a kind of a James Bond villain speech about the robots. And then he says, like, thus adding to the great concept of life, or the, I forget what the actual line is, but he's like, I'm on life's side. I'm not a villain. I'm a good guy. And then he presses a button and a strawberry, like, a bowl of strawberries pop up, and then he takes a bite out of one, and he starts choking. And he's like, where's the robot to pat you on your back? You know? All that kind of stuff. It was Ian Holm was the...
Yes.
Kind of the Obi-Wan of the show.
He was very funny and quite memorable, as he is in all his parts.
Yeah. Did you see him as a digital representation of Ash?
Yes, alien Romulus.
Yeah.
Well, and it's like a ghostly presence of Ian Holm.
Yeah.
And heaven knows what recordings they might have available, but it doesn't matter even if they don't.
You don't think it was just pure and simple, like, just rendering, like they just tried to approximate his voice, and then they just kind of got an AI or whatever to...
Well, they want to do the best job they can within the parameters of the project.
Yeah. It's like, oh, it all works. It's all kind of canonified because it's like you need the making of the event to be as the event as well. You know, like the screen event. Like, they both have to be complicit with each other. That's certainly how it is for casting. But who knows? So what do you think about the Silver Surfer being a girl?
Yes, well, what did you think of that? I suppose you've seen it by now, right?
Yeah, I've seen it on a laptop. I haven't seen it on a theater screen yet.
But it has good elements, I imagine, despite Reed's Richards mustache.
Reed doesn't factor into the show quite so much. He's kind of like Sue is the real hero of the show. And it's, and so the, like, it doesn't have to be a boys' club with the token girl so much.
Yes.
I guess that's maybe the angle. But it was just like, no, make Sue be the hero. But it was like a thing where, like, the sympathy that you get from the fact that Silver Surfer arrives as a villain but leaves as a hero is kind of there.
That's nice, yeah.
Because you get the fact that, like I'm only in the Herald business because of the fact that, like, I needed to pay some rent or whatever, you know. It's kind of the same joke that South Park makes about the ICE agents in the last episode of South Park.
Yes, that was
so. Where it's just like, you get a huge amount of money to do this bullshit job, and they're like, okay, I like money, you know. I need to take care of my nut. My bill nut. Yeah. So, yeah, Radio Valencia has a nut. And, you know, that's why we have benefits. And
a nut job. Well, I reserve the judgment in that regard for future deliberations.
Well, we shan't speak of it further.
Always with the dropping something on the floor.
What was it this time? The lighter?
Anything incriminating.
Yeah. There doesn't seem to be a surveillance, like, presence in the room. So
well, there is, but the question is, as I asked before, who's going to watch these significant tapes?
Right.
They will if something happens. Suppose an errant motorist crashed the front of the thing, then, of course, the 30 minutes up to that would be...
What happened to the real Radio Valencia? Like a fire truck like plowed into it or something? Or?
The little club, the eatery, yes, that was crashed into by a fire truck misjudging a turn at high speed.
Yeah. Crane blast.
But of course, it's just a coincidence. That's a different outfit. They just happened to be called Radio Valencia before we were called Radio Valencia by us.
Right. So even the name isn't original. It's just like calling yourself Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Kentucky Fried, or they say KFC these days, because fried is taboo in the advertising world.
Yeah. And KFC is all the more hashtagable. You just go hashtag KFC, and you're in, you're out, it's clean.
Kansas Fraternal Commission.
The Kentucky Fuck All Club.
Colonel von Richter, chickified edible substance.
Did you see the South Park where it was called medicinal fried chicken? And there was a thing where, like, Kentucky Fried Chicken stores weren't becoming available because they were being usurped, if you will, by medicinal marijuana stores. And much to the chagrin of Cartman, right, who's in love with KFC.
Right.
So then there's, like, fried chicken becomes like this black market event. And it turns into a Scarface sort of simulation. Yeah. So, with Eric as Al Pacino. And Oliver Stone's... Or no, was it Stone or De Palma?
Who did what?
Scarface.
That was, I believe, Brian De Palma.
Yeah.
I could certainly be wrong.
Oliver Stone may have just written it.
Yes.
Yeah. Like when Tarantino wrote Natural Born Killers.
What do you think of De Palma's feature, Sisters?
Oh, I don't know that one.
The one about the homicidal Siamese twin?
Yeah, I don't know that one.
Oh, I recommend it.
Haven't seen it.
Very highly. Great Bernard Herrmann score also.
Is it in the 70s?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay.
It's really spooky and creepy, and it's got the, you know, the story of the sisters Dominique and Danielle.
Yeah.
And other people that you'll recognize from De Palma's movies, like from The Phantom of the Paradise and so on, are in it. My complaint about it is it's too violent. If it were less violent, it would be a more popular movie. But they show the violence right in your face as it occurs and so on.
Is it like Straw Dogs kind of violence, where it's just like the violence is showcased in its own kind of way?
Well, it's would be better simply, in my opinion, to imply that it takes place. On the other hand, I was just thinking that because such a horrendous scene is shown toward the beginning, from then on, they really don't show you that much, but every time something awful happens, you're already, you know, creeped out enough to be exceptionally terrified.
Well, that's the thing. You don't know if it's going to happen again. Like it's implied that there's going to be
continued. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you know, yeah. The guy with the cutting the palm of the hand in the car, you know, it shows they're willing just to do anything.
Right.
And so that makes you afraid of them, even though for the rest of the movie they don't do much except clown around.
No more clowning. Ah.
Look what your brother did to the door. And then they bring out the 109-year-old vampire grandpa sucking the blood, you know. Some people feel that the cackling of the maniacs goes on too long and is pointless past a certain point. Others find it entertaining.
Kind of like the running of the bulls, you know, the cackling of the maniacs. Every year we do it, you know.
The horrible fiends have got the girl tied up in the dining room, you know, and they're having this horrible dinner with her and Grandpa and everybody else, Leatherface and so forth. The horrible family, the Sawyer family, get it? The Sawyer? Oh, you're a lousy audience. Well, here.
Here, you'll need this.
No, they are the Sawyer family. Originally known for desecrating graves and molesting the inhabitants.
So when does this Sawyer family come into play? Was that at the beginning, or was that later?
In human history, there have been families of fiends that waylay travelers and even dined on their remains. Most famously, Sawney Beam in England and his characters who would waylay and eat travelers. They were eventually caught and punished with the full severity of that barbaric time.
And then some.
Well, my point is, it does happen, and this type of cinema is morbidly obsessed with serial killers and all sorts of things whose appropriateness for entertainment can certainly be questioned. Remember how in the 80s the serial killers were the thing? Well, I think I told you when earlier this year I was in New Orleans, I went to the Museum of Death, and a great part of that seems to be devoted to the work of serial killers.
You saw Horrors of the Black Museum, yeah?
I have seen that movie. I'd like to see it again. I wasn't able to concentrate much on it last time.
That's the one that has the Emil Franchel prelude.
Uh-huh.
Where he hypnotizes like a girl and puts needles in her arms, and she doesn't feel it because she's hypnotized.
Just as you will be, our beloved audience.
Yeah. So you must let the movie do its thing to you. And
relax and let the hypno wheel... into a land of wonder.
Yeah, to think of like William Castle and...
and horror.
Like if movies were... I mean, movies have introductions now, but they're like these lame, like celebrity greetings where they say, like, thank you for seeing this movie theatrically. Like they... like there's a little, like... celebrity bumpers that come right before the screening.
I haven't seen those, but I haven't been to a movie for a while. Yeah. I can't remember the last
Tom
one.
Tom Cruise did it for the Mission Impossible movie, and I think the Superman movie had a little, like, hello, everyone, you know, kind of thing, you know, where they're in, they're out. It's like a 20-second, 30-second thing.
Did I see a movie called The Brutalist? With Adrian Brody.
Right, right.
I think I did see
that. Is that the Academy Award winning movie?
I did see the movie. It was interesting, quite interesting.
Is it long? Not that it matters.
Is it long, you're asking?
I think it's... is it a long movie?
It seems long at the time. It goes through all sorts of phases and stages, and the ending seems inconclusive to me. But there are some amazing performances in it. Is it Guy... unfortunately, I'm conflicting with two surnames associated with the name Guy. Guy Pearce or Guy Ritchie. Which Guy?
Guy Pearce is an actor. Guy Ritchie is a director, I think.
Yes, well, I think he, nonetheless, plays this odious part, but a fascinating part, in the movie. In The Brutalist.
Okay, yeah.
And his off and on relationship with the Adrian Brody character, the main character, generally generates the movie.
You know, I'd like to do a film farm again, and like the things that I never did as shows were like a big movie run, like a four movie, like afternoon to evening kind of a thing, and then you base it on an actor. Like, I kind of did it with Jonathan Demme in the concert movies, but I thought, like, I want to do an Arch Hall Jr. Film Festival. And I want to do a Michael Wincott Film Festival. Because I think he's great. So I want to, like, get all the Michael Wincott movies and turn it into a big thing, you know. Or not all of them, but choice ones, you know. Do you recognize the name? It has a... So, do you know the movie Talk Radio?
Yes, I have seen it.
You know the character Kent, who's like the heavy metal kid in the movie?
Uh-huh.
And he gets in the studio and he does Megadeth and he ends up being the new guy at the end of the movie. It's like,
uh-huh.
He's dead, of course, because he gets slain, but it's like,
right.
But the radio guys go like, hey, look, let's get that kid to be the new host of the show, you know, and he probably got the deal, you know, the coast to coast deal with the, you know, Humphrey's Coffee and all that, you know.
Projecting beyond the end of the movie.
Yeah, yeah. But it was the heavy metal kid, and he was in Alien Resurrection as the captain of that particular ship.
Yeah, I remember that.
He's in a lot of stuff, and he's very distinct. He's in Nope, and he sings Purple People Eater in Nope.
Wow, I don't remember that. Is that connected to the show that the Jimp is on?
Well, he's like an old director. His character is like an old director, right? So it's like they hire him, right, for this, you know, to get footage of the aliens, I guess, right?
But didn't it have some connection to that TV show featuring the chimp that went bananas and attacked everybody on the show?
Yeah, yeah. Like, that's the prelude stuff, is this, like, murdering chimp.
Was not going to murder the kid, and it felt that the kid was an outcast like itself, you know, stuck in a situation it didn't like. But as this realization was just about to be transmitted and understood, his brains are blown out by a sniper that shoots him when the kid is cowering under the table. But the kid is used, he's Chinese, and he's used for comic relief because he's, you know, not Anglo-Saxon.
Right.
Well, it's an interesting film, certainly.
Here in the Bayou Shrimp Mold Parklet. Yes, they even have parklets here in the swamp in Cajun Town. Oh, look, here comes another alligator. Just wave.
Yes. How wonderful it would be to just paddle in a boat among alligators and turtles and so on under this hanging Spanish moss.
Right.
In a John boat, probably. They have a square prow that rises out of the water.
Who, like, delivers, like, the final blow on Earth.
It does seem that the Great Guidance has blown his stack and is shooting.
Like, do I have to do everything myself? And he just does it, right?
Yes.
And so as a part of his final solution, is that when dinosaurs appear again?
They do seem to appear, whatever their symbolism is. And a very odd thing is that though they are clearly generated by the same people who created the special effects for the Lost Continent, they are not cut from the Lost Continent. At least some of them aren't. Some of them don't appear in the Lost Continent.
Yeah.
But they're those funny-looking Ceratopians.
They're like they're repurposed lizards, and then they're stop-motion stuff.
Yes. The same footage appears in a different form in the It's a Good Life episode of the Twilight Zone.
Right.
Where the kid makes all the adults watch this dinosaur footage.
Right, right. Oh, my God. That's so great. That's a Billy movie, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was in the Joe Dante version as a kind of a, like a guy just hanging around the bar or whatever there, right? He was like a local. Billy Mumy played a local. And then, what's her name? Wife of Tom Hanks in Apollo 13. Huh. I forget her name. She was in The Doors, too, as Jim Morrison's witchy girlfriend. Kathleen Quinlan. So it's Quinlan's thing, and then she goes and sees, you know, the young boy, and then it's like the cartoon house. But before she gets there, it's Dick Miller's bar. And the kid is banging on the Tempest machine, and he's banging on it, and he's like, hey, easy on the games, kid, you know, like, put another quarter in it, maybe it'll work better. And then he befriends Kathleen Quinlan in the parking lot after letting himself be run over as she backs out. It's like, oh, I'm so sorry, give me a ride home. Okay, sure. And then they go, yeah. You know all this, right? Why am I saying it? But I love the intercutting of the this is the guy, he did the practical effects for The Thing.
Who did the mirror? Right?
Yeah.
Optical, because a lot of their stuff was practical. There's only one remaining stop motion shot. The others were cut.
Yeah, no, in The Thing, there was like a guy who basically was the designer of all the creatures, Rob Bottin. So Rob Bottin is working on the Twilight Zone episode where Dante, right? I'm thinking like,
yes, I remember that.
Yeah. So it's like that stuff where it's just like all these creatures are just kind of like appearing and like smoking, and there's like, you know, fire engine sirens and whatever, you know. We're in this cartoon world, you know. And peanut butter in the burger. I got to meet Joe Dante in a kind of a, like, you line up and then you get to say hi to him and or he signs something, kind of a thing. It's like a meet and greet, but it's like, it's just
Joe Dante was, and I guess you should say remains, a monster kid, a brood that was raised by Forrest J. Ackerman and famous monsters of Filmland magazine. And he was known for a famous faux pas in the history of the magazine and its relationship with American International Pictures. You can take envelopes and questions of different size. They had a thing where Joe Dante got to editorialize about monster movies, and he was very critical about some of AIP's recent product, which was aimed at teenagers.
Right. It's like, and is they this the best you can do kind of stuff?
Nicholson and Arkoff responded angrily, saying, what is this? You're printing things that attack our movies, you know. Why should we give you any publicity? Our art. It is not digitally created and nailed down from the beginning, but organic.
But people love throwing that "you'll never work in this town again" kind of threat, you know?
Yes.
But that was, that would hang over people if they didn't think that they were salvageable. You could do post-tragedy stuff, I guess.
Yes. There are all sorts of possible angles that can be used. 12:35 a.m. here in San Francisco on the Ask Dr. Hal Show, live on radio.
Yeah, broadcasting from the Disco Cube.
From the Disco Inferno next door, the entire wall, a huge vibrating drum that transmits the incessant thumping.
There was a guy, when I went and had a beer earlier, there was a guy on stage, and he had this, like, green light on him.
Oh, a green light?
Yeah, and he was, like, a kind of a hoardy-ish, I guess, Asian man. And he was just, like, full of smiles, just super goofy, you know.
What show was this?
Just right next door.
Oh.
And it was like a thing. I was like, I want to get out of my camera and film this guy, you know. But I didn't. But it was like this thing where it was like...
Well, wait a minute. He was officially part of the show?
No, no, no. He was just some dude that jumped up on stage because you could.
Oh, I see. Know? So he's... What? Does this happen frequently? Well, is it allowed?
People get up on stage and they dance, right?
Holy
so,
cow.
Like, here's a guy who's, like, dancing on stage, and he's like, mm-hmm. I'm the king of the world, you know, but he's, like, really sloppy, and he's, like, just super, like he's just wrapped up in glee, like he can't even manifest.
So his dancing is horrible?
His dancing is horrible.
Yeah.
He's completely arrhythmic, and but he's, like, having the time of his life, you could tell. Like, he's not lying about being happy, but as a result of his, like, happiness or whatever, he's like a total girl magnet, right? And it's like all these girls are dancing with him and like giving him all these moves and everything. And it's just like, it's just a total crack up, you know.
How large is this stage?
It's like in half. There's like a high half and a low half.
Oh, okay.
And the low half can facilitate probably about a dozen dancers if they all wanted to get up there and, you know, boogie.
Uh-huh.
But it's normally about half full, or maybe there's like three people up there. But it's like whether like tonight's kind of a popular show, so people like getting up on stage. But this guy was just like, he was like so happy that like the people that were there to have fun couldn't ignore him at all. And he, you know what I mean? It's like, here's a toy. This is great. You know, they're having fun with this guy, like playing with him as if he was a toy in a way, because he was so like all he had was his like kind of wiggy happiness, you know, like on stage, you know, like just frozen smile, everything, you know. It was nutty.
Well, but as you say, it worked for him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it was just like, it was like he was like being on Masculine at the Playboy Club or something, you know. That kind of a thing. Like,
well, that would
I'm
be
on
really...
like a bunch of highs right now, you know. I saw some Playboy Mansion video on this thing, and
you
it
mean
was like
Playboy After Dark.
No, no, no. It was like a Playboy Mansion party.
It wasn't Hefner's TV show.
No, no, no. It was like somebody there with a camera, and it
oh.
was like,
oh, okay.
I think they made mentions like, oh, HBO is here, or oh, Showtime is here. Like, they
well, that's rather recent.
Well,
they were quite active when I was down there.
It was 1983.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1983, like, they had all this music in the background, and the music was Michael Jackson, Thriller, and what was the one that came? Oh, David Bowie, Let's Dance. So tracks from those like albums, and they were just like, whoa, this is what the DJ is playing at the Playboy Mansion, you know. It was just basically top 10.
It was like the Hefner Channel or something?
No, it was just top 10 pop hits, you know what I mean? Like, it was the
what
most...
was the connection with Playboy Enterprises?
Oh, I don't know. I was just thinking, like, the party is so, like, low energy and...
The
like,
ongoing pajama party of Hef.
Yeah, but Hef is the only guy wearing it. he's like wearing a robe and he's got the pipe and everything, but nobody else is like pajama-ing with him.
No, they've all got tuxedos and extra shiny shoes and ball gowns.
And it's not like the girls are in pajamas, like that'd be fun.
No, they're dressed to the nines.
Yeah.
In the height of fashion.
Yeah. So it's, I don't know, it just seems ponderous. It was like, I don't know, like this doesn't even look like fun at all. And people are trying to be like kind of like flirtingly whimsical with each other, but it was... It was like flash paper burning, you know. It was just like a, like it was funny for that long, like bam. Any jokes was like flash paper on the humor shelf. Oh, that is yours. I was wondering. I was going, hey, is that root beer?
I did bring it along.
I didn't want to get all grabby with it. I want to...
Because, you see, when you have to keep yakking, you want to be able to refresh yourself
right.
Periodically.
Oh, nice. That's the stuff.
It is. I think it's the best available brand of root beer.
Oh, you know what I had recently? It was root beer milk. About a week ago, I had a quart at home.
Where'd you find that? You buy it by the quart, I understand.
Yeah, they're in the big glass. They're glass bottles too. I got it at Molly Stone's on 18th Street, like near Castro. And they have strawberry and orange as well, like orange, like a dreamsicle. Which is great, actually, too.
Well, just ask if you want more.
They have a horchata flavor, but I haven't found that one yet.
It's the sassafras, the herbal essence that powers root beer of all kinds, but it has to balance its other constituent elements. Not just be a flavor of syrup added to soda water. Not only that, but there's birch beer. Have you ever enjoyed that soft drink?
Yeah.
It's a close relative of root beer. Well, I wonder if we'll ever be down in L.A. to visit Galco's Old World Grocery and walk among the aisles.
Does it still exist as a place?
It does. I looked it up online, and it's still going strong. Indeed, if you want to order anything, they'll send it in a styrofoam box that protects the bottle. But the pictures are there showing the aisles of all the different sodas from all over the world and obscure parts of the United States. So when I was down there working on the TV show, Greg Bishop and I would go there, and for $20 you can get 20 different sodas of every exotic description. Aztec Cola and Green River and you name it. Not to mention vanilla phosphate, cherry phosphate, raspberry phosphate, lemon phosphate.
I'm going to the drugstore for a phosphate.
You can get a 5-cent one or a 10-cent one. As you sit at the counter and drink it. But you could also get a towering ice cream soda, which is not a milkshake, but this layered concoction with different layers, some sweet, some not so sweet, ice cream, soda, you know, chocolate. You slurp your way down through it.
Okay.
In a liquid form. A production of the old drugstore, the Pop's Chocolate Shop days. As in, All the cats join in, you know.
Ice cream soda is what it was called.
Yeah. I wonder if you could still get one at the St. Francis Soda Fountain. On the bus, I go by that place. It's still open. They're still selling their homemade candy.
I had an egg cream the other day.
You had what?
I had an egg cream the other day.
Did you have it there?
No, but I had one. And it was like, hey, look, this is like a old 20th century thing. It's not even really California specific. It's like an East Coast thing. But yeah, it was in Santa Rosa. I had the egg cream.
Well, that's nice.
That'd be a nice thing to have, like, here, right?
Sure.
Like
a dispenser.
Right.
You just press here, and your egg cream comes out there in the little cup.
They're like milkshakes, egg creams.
And coffee.
And, yeah, coffee, bananas. What? No bananas? Get out of here, man.
We have no bananas today. In Bananarama and Sense Around Me.
One part juke, one part joy. A thing where you had to, like, you're in a Radio Valencia, you know, and you were next door to the cavern when the Beatles were playing, and what's it with these?
Those were the days.
What's up with these guys, you know, playing loud in the cave, you know?
Back in our green salad days, why anything seemed possible and fired with the enthusiasm of youth. Although you'd hardly think that to look at us now. Also,
I concur.
We're planning the Subgenius Youth International Festival. Where we
look, balloons.
Siphon energy from youthful followers to keep our own carcasses in better running order. In vampiric fashion, living off another person's life energy. But really, is this not some sort of commensal relationship? Hardly parasitism. There's plenty to go around. Say we.
I'll say. Or that's right.
That is right. And it's right as rain, right by me, right
my
over
Gola
here,
special
right
in, sweet
on
nose.
The stand beside the bed over here.
Hey, Gola, if we could put your name on our fried chicken, we'd make a killing. The GFC.
Yeah, that article in Castle of Frankenstein really did have all that information about every one of those sailors, what their lives were like, and some of them were pretty interesting.
Oh, all the backstories of them.
Yes, including Goa.
So they were
gives
all...
his name and details about. It's just a fascinating thing.
So they're all on Murderer's Row, basically, right?
Like they were in the Caliph's prison yard.
Yeah.
They had committed crimes which the Caliphate had declared to be worthy of execution.
Right.
And so that's where Sinbad got his crew, where the men fear headsman's axe more than the Cyclops' horn or something like that.
Yeah.
So there they go off, but they don't like it. See.
Oh, Slayubus.
Careful, we might need that arrow to fight for our lives. Everything about this makes me like it less and less. This whole thing stinks. There are rich prices plying the coastal waters. about the bald magician? Well, feed him to the fish.
Who was that actor?
Danny Green, I think, British actor.
Yeah.
Familiar from British movies. And in a lot of Harryhausen movies, you find these British actors, some of them quite good. But it's amazing how in some parts, some actors who had a very minor presence in the studios at the time managed to make an indelible, unforgettable impression. Frank Buglia in 20 Million Miles to Earth. I've seen him in other programmers from Columbia Pictures, and he plays some gangster or stooge. You know, he has no personality. But in 20 Million Miles, as the old doctor that the kid brings the thing to, he's there. And beyond that, beyond those scenes, on into the latter part of the movie where the creature breaks loose in the city of Rome, is importance seems to rise strangely from being this rural guy into one of the directors of the Rome Zoo examining the Venusian monster and feeding it with injections with an enormous hypodermic needle. And how about Frank Zaremba, you know, Dr. Uhl, U-H-L, I believe is how it's spelled. He's that guy from the CIA who's along on the whole thing of trying to capture the Ymir. He's the guy who pulls the switch that electrifies the Ymir under the metal net. But first they set it all up, then they motion, and he comes over and pulls the switch. He flies the helicopter that drops the net on the creature in the first place. He does all sorts of things. And does them well because he's a U.S. government special agent.
Yeah.
Now in the companion piece to 20 Million Miles to Earth, Earth versus the Flying Saucers, Frank Zaremba does not fare so well and is atomized, vaporized by an alien ray, leaving only his glasses, his cane, and I think his hat. Remember that? The alien blasts him in the forest, and his whole body discorporates, vaporizes.
No.
In Earth versus the Flying Saucers.
Well,
it's the same guy. The same guy who flies the helicopter and turns the switch. And also he yaks about how they've managed to use a special plastic sponge which will keep out the deadly toxins which killed Dr. Sharman. Dr. Sharman, please, please, Dr. Sharman. You must lie down. Nurse,
please.
Yes, I know. Please don't abuse the Sharman. Well, he had a horrible disease that he caught on the planet Venus. The only one who didn't catch it was Calder. Why? Is it because Calder was in a position of command and didn't leave the spaceship while the others went out and had their air supply contaminated by the Venusian rot?
There is no air.
Calder was the sole survivor of a multi-crew ship. And in the book, which was written by Harry Harrison and serialized by Ackerman in Spaceman magazine and in Famous Monsters, there is a part where they're on Venus. You know, they meet a wild Ymir and so on. That's an interesting addition to the whole shebang. Not only that, but comic books have appeared carrying these improbable stories even farther. If only there were some sort of creatures on Venus, but nothing that we could have anything to do with. Unless they...
You've never seen a man before.
They could live in the upper clouds, perhaps.
You're the first man we've seen.
Well, in the movies, they're chorus girls.
All right, you catwoman.
in Abbott and Costello Go to Mars, of course, they goof around and they land in New Orleans during Mardi Gras and think they're on Mars. But later on, they take off again, and this time they accidentally land on Venus, which is inhabited by the comely chorus girls with the long legs and the science fiction futuristic mini-skirted look.
Right. Take it modern.
There are no men on the planet, only Abbott and Costello and all the babes.
Right.
So they never actually go to Mars at all, even though the name of the movie is Abbott and Costello Go to Mars. I want my money back. No, that's
Isn't
just that the way it is.
Isn't that it's a bunch of girls?
They're for nuisance.
Is that the rationale? It's like, we put girls in it. What's to complain about?
Yeah, I know. Everybody wants to see the girls. Stop your convention. Yes, Mr. Minsky. But they're thighs. They have to be this thick. Yes, Mr. Minsky.
See the cigar? You see it? And he tosses it and burns in his face. You know. Yes. What was the guy? He was in Barton Fink. He was like the movie head, and then he, like, World War II started, and he wore military clothes.
Yes, but which was whipped up by the prop department.
Right, exactly.
Yes, he's the horrible studio head. I forget the actor who played him, though.
It was one of the best roles ever, was that guy.
Yeah, it was really quite good.
Everything in that movie is great. Even the, who was the love interest? She was, I want to say Diane Weiss, but it wasn't her.
Not Jennifer Jason Lee or something.
No, it was, she was in, like, Woody Allen movies around that same period.
Juliet Lewis? What's her name from the, West World series, Rachel, what's her name?
Oh,
well, you're not talking about her either, then.
No.
I'm sure I don't know who.
All right. I gotta look it up.
Evan Rachel Wood is what I meant to say. That's not who you meant.
No. Okay. So, let's go hard and think.
Full casting credits. You see, you get everything on the phone these days. So live it up in a world of advanced electronics.
Oh, it says Baron Funk. That's what I wrote.
Baron Funk? Ach, du lieber, Baron von Funk.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I'm
doing. So that's going to be my new DJ persona, is Baron von Funk.
Funkadelic. Sure, why not?
And I'll have a bunch of sound effects. Don't worry about that. So here it is, cast.
As long as it's not the
Michael Lerner played Jack Lipnick.
Baron Friedrich von
Schoenvoort. Judy Davis was the one.
Judy Davis, all right. Yeah, she was in a bunch of interesting films.
John Polito, Steve Buscemi, Tony Shalhoub, John Mahoney.
Great cast.
John Goodman. Goodman, of course, because he's the devil or something.
The devil?
Well, he brings fire with him, like that was like his devil move.
Yes.
Yeah.
In Barton Fink.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'll show you the life of the mind. Yeah. I will show you the life of the mind. Going on.
come up to 1 o'clock, usually the terminator of our activities. But as I said earlier,
I'll be back.
The drawing session tonight was canceled, and so I think I can stay past the terminal line of 1 a.m., possibly shut up at 2 a.m.